Clean contact.
I'd hit it again because that shot was a defining moment. And when a defining moment comes along, you define the moment, or the moment defines you.
Here it comes. Oh my goodness.
Hello and welcome to the Golf Practice Podcast. My name is Andy Hayes. Ty Libby is out this week. He's out of town at a wedding. And so with me instead is Chris Olerking.
Andy, how's it going?
Welcome back to the podcast,
Chris. Thank you.
And also, we're having our first player spotlight on the podcast. Danny Fisher is a senior at Lake Forest High School and a golf practice, what would you call him, a player?
Student for the last 4 years.
Yeah, Danny, You're the captain of the Lake Forest varsity golf team. You're going to the University of Miami of Ohio. You seem like a very good golfer, probably better than me. And Chris, so
I don't know about that.
Welcome to the podcast, Danny.
Thank you, Andy and Chris. I appreciate it, and thanks for having me on.
How you doing so far?
All is well. Our high school season's coming to a close pretty soon. It was nice to finally commit to a college. That was really the big stressor of probably this past summer. All is well.
Sweet. Well, we'll get into that a little bit later. Yeah, as we said, Danny has just committed to University of Miami of Ohio, Division I school. It's pretty cool. I don't think I've ever met a Division I golfer before, so we're in a good standing here. Danny, we ask each person who comes on this podcast kind of how they got into golf and what really got them going and, yeah, with the sport.
Sure. Yeah, so my grandpa, my mom's dad, was an avid golfer. Played all of his life. So he took me out to Briarwood for the first time when I was about 8. Took me to the first tee or wherever, I can't even remember, and just hit a bunch of drivers. He died shortly thereafter, and then I didn't really pick up a golf club until 12 because I was still interested, and was over at Deer Path Golf Course just working. Met my first golf coach there, and then I got into the golf practice in April of the year prior to my freshman year of high school, just to prepare for high school tryouts. And I mean, from there on, my goal was to, I set a goal to play college golf and achieve that. So, with the golf practice, it's really been structured learning and being a student of the game is what they preach. So I've enjoyed it.
Great. So when you decided you wanted to be a college golfer, that was before high school? Or in high school?
It was right before high school golf. I made my decision. That was, I played 1 year of baseball and then quit. So really all of high school, it was working towards Division I golf.
And were you into competitive golf before that?
Really wasn't. I liked the idea of it, just never really had the opportunity or chance.
So you were just like, I like the idea of playing college golf. I want to go do that.
Exactly. Yeah, and I mean, set my mind to it, and I wouldn't have done it without the golf practice.
Did you have a sense of really what that took at that time?
No idea at all. I think after researching and really seeing how good everyone is, and there's so much competition, it's unreal. I said something, I might as well try to do it. And I think I was too far in, like by sophomore year, to where I couldn't jump out, and that was exciting to me. I just kept pushing and pushing.
Yeah, so it seems like a lot of kids, the thought of collegiate golf is really cool. I remember myself just circling Big Ten teams when I was in high school, having no clue really like the tournaments I'm supposed to be playing in, and what that process actually looks like. And so I think it's having that goal, but then once you get into it, understanding really what it sort of takes, what tournaments you need to be playing in, what the scores need to look like, and so on.
You mentioned coming to golf practice often, so that was kind of signifying like when you started taking golf more seriously.
Sure. Yeah, that was the starting point.
And so before then, it was just like playing for fun.
Yeah, I mean, just going out with my buddies after school when I was in like eighth grade. And then future teammate Jason Folker, his dad recommended Chris as a coach. We went and had an interview. All I knew was how to hit hook draws or whatever. Hooks.
Push hooks.
So yeah, from there on, I knew this was the place I wanted to be, and the foundation of what was to come.
Sweet. Did you have any? What were like the early years like of starting to take golf seriously? Did you have any major breakthroughs? Was there anything you really started working on or got a lot better at?
I wouldn't say major breakthroughs. This was a lot of frustration. I think once I started mindfulness practice was when golf itself clicked. You know, you can only work so much on the swing and your mechanics. The stuff outside, I think, is what separates the good from the great. So, yeah, that was really the breakthrough. It wasn't a score or a tournament.
When did you start doing the mindfulness?
It's a great question. I'd say shortly after I joined the golf practice.
Yeah, we started, I think you were with us a year. Or no, maybe that you're going into your freshman year.
That winter,
we started the M360 program. And Dr. Arthur Hoffman leads the mindfulness portion of that program. And so Danny was in our first year of that with four others. Mm-hmm. And it was something that certainly contributed to his success. 'Cause like he's saying, a lot of kids can hit the ball great, but
right,
you know, there's a lot of other things that come along with it. And so that's what dealing with the stress and staying in the present moment, was something that the program helped him with.
Was Danny, at first, did he just seem like any other kid, or is there something different about him? Did he sound overconfident saying you want to play college golf? And you're kind of like, all right, kid, get real.
Well, what I recognized with Danny early, that he was an athlete, and he had some background with competitive sports through baseball. He was a pretty decent baseball player from what I heard. When he came to me, I remember our first meeting at the putting green at Highland Park Country Club. And he was
Highland
basically...
Park Country Club, rest in peace. Love that place.
All grown right. in.
Keep going. Sorry.
And at the time, he couldn't chip and he couldn't putt. And he was having problems. And it was, you know, it was interesting. We actually spent the first three or four lessons just working on those parts of his game, because he recognized that as something that he was struggling with. But I think I realized there was something special when I gave him a short game drill to do that could take up to two and a half hours to complete. And I gave him all these different steps. He had to graduate one exercise to move to the next, and there was probably 10 to 12 points and exercises in it. And he was doing it. And so I could tell immediately that he was pretty committed, you know, for a 14-year-old to be spending all that time doing chipping and putting drills. That could be frustrating too, because if you don't make, you know, if you don't complete something, you start over. And so that was when I was sort of thinking, hey, this kid has something.
Danny, I'm not sure if you know, but I've made it known many times on this podcast that practicing putting is so boring. So what were you thinking wanting to do that?
You know, I was kind of just playing the student role. I almost didn't know what I was doing at the time. It was just about taking the time to do it.
And then you started playing on the high school team. Did you make varsity your freshman year?
That is a no. I shot 85-86 freshman year. Was the last guy, not the last guy of the top six on JV, and then didn't make varsity until the end of my sophomore year.
Okay. Wow. Oh, so not till the end of your sophomore year?
I was called up for the playoffs.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you've been playing basically 2 years of college golf, or 2 years of high school varsity golf.
Mm-hmm. 2 full years, yep.
It seems like you had a fairly big jump forward at some point, right? If you go from your sophomore year not playing varsity golf to now what would be a year and a half after that, you're committed to a D1 school.
Right, yeah. So my dad always preaches 8% growth. Just with scores. But I mean, I think I work pretty hard and work smart. Most guys, I mean, I think Chris and Arthur have taught me to where, I mean, you don't have to take so much time. You just have to do it correctly the first time. But back to the 8% growth, I shot 85, 86 my freshman year, 78, 79 my sophomore year. And then I believe 71, 74 my junior year, and then didn't have to try out my senior year. So just constantly improving where other guys may hit a flat line was really, really big for me.
On the other podcast episode you were on, you said 2 strokes a year would be good for someone.
4 strokes a year is phenomenal.
So yeah.
A phenomenal improvement. Yeah. I mean, Danny, we looked online at his scoring average. His first year playing tournaments, 2015, his average was 89. The next year it dropped to 80, so 9 strokes. And then from 80 to 74. And then from last year to this year to 71.5. And that's, you know, that 2.5 strokes is equivalent to 10 strokes. I mean, that's a big...
And those are tournament rounds.
Those are, yeah, strictly tournament rounds.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Do you remember your... What would you say is your best tournament round you've ever played?
I'd say most of my best rounds come in the second round. I think I play pretty good under pressure. But the best round had to be... I was down a stroke to fellow M360 Max Golding in the second round of MAJGT back in April, and shot bogey free 66. That was probably the most flawless golf I've played for those. I had was like 6 under through 11 holes, or 5 under through 11 holes, sorry. And just kept it there. Usually in years past, I'd have that fall off and turn it into 1 or 2 under. But I think through mindfulness, I stayed strong throughout that entire round. Yeah. And so far that's my greatest accomplishment.
Wow. You keep bringing up mindfulness. What's mindfulness?
The way I perceive it, it's just, the constant search of equanimity, achieving a calm state. And I work it in my pre and post shot routines. I think it's super important for me just to remain in the moment. And I mean, I can do everything I can on the range before rounds. But once I'm there, it's not like I'm changing my swing or anything. So just remaining present in there has really been huge.
All right. So some of our listeners haven't been in high school for some time. What is equanimity?
In balance, just calm.
So everything in balance.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No matter what's going on around you, that you've got a sense of peace, a sense of ease. You're able to take punches, stay in the present moment. And these are things that you don't hear a lot of tour pros talking about their mental game. I think they do that on purpose. I think they want to keep that almost a secret in a way. But there's certainly things happening. You know, when Phil won in Mexico and you saw him in the playoff and they had just the cameras right in his face and they're just showing him, you could see that there's breathing techniques happening, and you look at Jason Day behind the ball and what he does. There's not a lot spoken about it, but those guys being the best in the world at what they do, they've got to get their mind in a place that's going to allow them to perform and be comfortable.
Yeah. So I play golf quite a bit. If I'm hitting my driver, maybe I'm hitting draws. But then I get to hole 16. There's OB left. So what do? I hook it out of bounds left. Can you tell me what I should do better?
I'd hit 7 iron off the tee. I don't really know. That's what I would do. I mean, I'd just get something in play because there's actually on a golf course that I've played in tournament golf many times, the 16th hole has left OB and I've hit it there way too many times. So, I mean, just hitting an iron off the tee just to get yourself in play.
Okay. So
fantastic.
Maybe turn it on for yourself. What kind of techniques are you doing like in the moment? Let's say you just had a bad hole. How do you get back to that?
In terms of the swing, it's all alignment for me. Just make sure I'm aimed in the right spot and then trust that the ball is going to go where I think it'll go. Other than that, just stick to my routine and trust what I've done for the past 5 years.
Cool. Yeah. What is your routine?
It's really a lot of breathing techniques that I probably won't dive into.
What? That's what you're here for.
It's a secret.
It's a secret? It's a
secret. Top secret. Uh-huh.
Can you
we still
give
us have like some tournaments to go this year.
Yeah.
Okay. You're not going to give it away to competition.
No, but, okay. But yeah, it's just staying in the moment and some swing thoughts that I have.
Yeah. What are your swing thoughts?
Just hit the outside of the ball because, like you, Andy, I tend to draw the ball a little bit too much sometimes. So starting the ball left of my target or at my target and having it move a little bit to the right instead of left is really what I've been striving for.
Better players miss. Mm-hmm. Very common.
What is that?
It's a better players miss. A ball that's hooking left, right? I mean, most high handicappers have troubles closing the club face, so they miss it, you know, high right. And better players get the club stuck behind them and over-rotate the face, and the ball moves too far left. And so those players have to sort of work to get the ball back. I sent Danny an Instagram post last night from Justin Thomas, who was talking about his pre-shot thoughts. It's exactly what Danny is striving for.
Like, what were some of Justin Thomas's thoughts?
He has the same miss. He misses left, and so he gets the club face too closed in the backswing and the club too far across the line, and so the club rebounds to the inside on the downswing, and he over-rotates the face, and he gets hooking it. So he rehearses. You see him take that club back halfway, and he looks at it, and he's looking at the club face is square to the path, and the shaft is on plane right before he pulls the trigger. That's what you need to do on that hole. You're asking. Right. Yeah, you need some of that.
Well, I just have, there's holes where I don't have breathing techniques. I don't have that as part of my routine where it doesn't, it is that, but it's just like the swing comes out of nowhere because I'm nervous, because I'm afraid, whatever. And it seems to shoot a 66, you have to, with no bogeys, you have to be so much more in control of your whole game and your whole mind and all that things. If ever I go out and birdie the first two of the first four holes, that's a 78 or 80 for me, guaranteed. I'm not one to hold a low round together.
Yeah, I mean, those strong starts were really hard for me in the beginning. I remember one tournament last high school season, I birdied five of my first six holes. I started 500 through six and fought it back all the way to one over when I signed my scorecard. I mean, and I think through mindfulness, through everything, you know, just keep pushing to go lower. There are still birdies out there. I mean, you can't have the defeatist mindset where, oh, I got to hold on. Just keep trying to make birdies.
And as a junior golfer, that's where you start, right? Mm-hmm. You start off trying to hold on to it because you're in a territory that you've never been in before.
Right.
Right. So there's, as soon as you wake up in that round, then there's sort of a panic. You hit one bad shot and now you're worried you've lost it. And that's what the mindfulness teaches you, to be present in that moment, that it's just you, the ball and the target. And it's just a shot, you know, it's not a shot that represents a certain score or performance. It's just that shot in that moment.
Yeah. And so if you could, Chris, if you could give like a broader description, what is the mindfulness to stay present? What kinds of things do you teach these students how to do?
So there's three things that they're focusing on. One is connecting with their breath awareness. One is with their body. And one is with their surroundings. And also noticing their state of mind, and just accepting it for what it is and moving forward. Because there's this narrative network that, which is basically the story that you're telling yourself. And as most everybody, as soon as they hit a bad shot, the story starts, right? Yeah. You know, oh, this always happens to me. You know, I'm just not good enough. And it'll play and play. And sometimes it's playing for multiple holes before you notice it. And
my story's going even on good shots, because then it's, oh, this isn't right. This shouldn't keep happening. So it's not only the bad shots.
Yeah. But. Yeah. So you think about that. So the kids are being trained to notice that reactivity quickly and let it go, accept it, and then move forward. And so the kids that we've seen take the biggest jumps in terms of performance, the ones that have embraced this part of the program, because they've, I think, have really needed it in a sense that they need this to get better. Jason, who's at Carnegie Mellon right now, Jason Folker, who was 2 years ahead of Danny, you know, Jason had all the potential in the world, you know, hit the ball like a tour player and shoots 82 all the time in tournaments. And so he knew that he had some mental weakness happening. And so he committed himself. And I think, you know, he was sort of a trailblazer for Danny. I think Danny looked up to Jason and saw that turned his game around. And I think maybe it added to your commitment to that part of the program, because you saw firsthand the person that was ahead of you on your team, everybody looked up to, was doing it as well.
I played in a match with Jason at our TGP fall end of the year party, and he beat me. So I don't think we should talk about him anymore.
Yeah, he had a podcast. Good tournament this weekend. He shot 68, 69 in the second round. Nice. So finished second on his team. So he's had two good tournaments, cool. And he's off to a great start his college season.
Is this mindfulness training, like training freshmen? When you're a freshman, you're at 15, 14. Yeah. Is it normal to teach 14-year-olds equanimity?
I think it's a difficult subject matter for young minds because it takes a mature person to embrace it, practice it. I mean, we're asking the kids to spend, you know, between 15 to 60 minutes a day practicing on their own at home. And so it's hard to find the time. It's hard to stay consistent to it. It's asking a lot, but it's what's required. So there's no way to get good at it if you just don't practice it. So it's just another practice.
So you're practicing this every night?
Most nights, yeah. I took a little break after my summer tournament schedule was over, but it's at least, for me, at least 25, 30 minutes. And then the goal starting in May was to reach 5 hours, kind of a tournament round of straight, just knowing my surroundings. I've gotten to 4 hours during one sitting, which I thought was pretty cool. But yeah, still working, and it's much like the golf swing. You can always improve at it.
4 hours in one sitting?
It was a lot, yeah. It was kind of a challenge I brought on myself and with Arthur's help.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's with incredible. The goal being that if 5 hours is a tournament round, and so if you can meditate for 5 hours, you can you can keep yourself at ease and peace for 5 hour tournament round.
I hear everyone talking about how this generation's ruined by Instagram and short attention spans, but here you're meditating for 4 hours. That's pretty crazy. Was there ever a time? Was there a moment where you knew that Division I golf was a real possibility for you?
So at the start of the process, I emailed probably 50 schools, anywhere from, it was like Illinois, when I was shooting 81s in tournaments, anywhere from Illinois to small Division III schools. And no one really got back, which I didn't really know. I thought it was different for people not to respond to your emails, but I guess that's how it worked. But really the first time I really saw the possibility was, pretty recently ago at the Illinois Junior Am, I had 4 Division I coaches following me. And at that time, I kind of had a feeling that I'd played well up until then, and I played really well when they were watching. So at that time, I kind of knew it was a real, real possibility.
Just as far as people, like your scores were starting to get lower, people were noticing you.
Right.
Did that change anything?
No. The mindset starting the 2018 golf season was be the hunted rather than try to come from behind. So having that mindset of almost I'm going to win in everything I'm trying to play in was kind of cool. And it was different for me because I at first couldn't handle it. But over time, I got used to it.
And, yeah. I mean, the year before you were under the radar player, right? And that's something that, you know, we all worked on. Arthur worked on with you is to be the guy. I mean, everyone's looking at you and now it's, you know, people expect you almost to go out there and play well now. And that's a different shift, you know, in mindset, you know, and you look at the top players, I mean, you look at Tiger and you think about his ability to close in that tournament a couple of weeks ago, the Tour Championship.
Oh, it's like, been covered on this podcast.
Yeah, he didn't
times.
Forget about that. Yeah. He didn't forget how to close and how to get himself to that place where he's dominating. So it's great to see that growth in Danny because, you know, I know what his long-term goals are with golf. And if he wants to accomplish them, you know, he has to go out there and be that guy.
Yeah. Wow. So you see all these D1 coaches following you, and to you, that's normal. This was what I was planning on having happen.
Well, I was hoping to happen. Once it actually happened, I got a little nervous. The second hole where I was playing, there's water on both sides. And, I mean, right off the bat, I was faced with a challenge. But I think through everything we've worked on, facing those nerves and stress, it worked out in the end.
So these coaches they're decked out in their college gear.
They were, yeah, it was pretty cool.
Everyone knows they're there. Exactly. And you know.
Oh,
and then
yeah.
You step up to hole two and there's water on both sides.
Yep.
What club did you hit?
Hit driver because it's like 470 yards, par four.
Okay.
And hit a good one, made birdie. So that was, and then I birdied the next hole too. So yeah, that was a good feeling, and it kind of eased the stress to where I was in a position to finish really well in a big tournament.
Chris, when you keep hearing these stories, is it normal? Does it seem like this is what Danny has earned based on how, you know, his preparation, how much he's done?
Yeah, he has earned it. He has earned the right to be comfortable in these moments, and he's not. I mean, like you said, hey, I was nervous. I mean, nobody's not nervous. He knew what those tournaments meant this summer.
Sure.
And it was probably the most stress that he's dealt with. But that foundation that he's created, you know, through his meditation, has given him the skill set to get through those moments, you know, where his talent can now shine through and is not being, you know, taken to a level where he can't swing a club.
Sure.
You know, I always say bad shots come from bad swings and bad swings come from doubt, you know? So he's making good swings in those moments, and he's got a strong game all around. So even if he does miss a shot, you know, his chances of making par are very high because his putter's strong, his short games and his hands are good. His tee ball's good. He can shape shots and flight shots. And so he's got their all around package.
Yeah. Cool. And then what was the process like going forward after that? You had four coaches follow you. Did they all, you know, hand you a scholarship on 18 green or?
Shortly thereafter, I got a couple offers. That was really the huge tournament that got me started with the recruiting process. And then our family probably took the next month to go on visits. And then, yeah, I ended up making my decision the day before my senior year of school started.
And your decision?
Miami of Ohio, which I was super pumped about from day one. That was almost a dream school. Just because I went by, you know, I at first said the least academic school with the best golf. And then coming to think about it, let's say I break my leg or something, I want to be in a place where I'm still happy. Yeah. So Miami was the total package.
Good decision. What's a D1's, what are their facilities like? What kind of stood out about this place?
So all the Division I schools I visited, they have their own kind of room, indoor place for the Midwest schools who have tough winters, which was really cool, a team locker room, and then a nice home course. Most of them have full access to it, so they can go wherever they want. You have workouts in the morning, class, and then the whole afternoon is booked for teamwork and practice.
That's awesome. A friend's friend, I heard a story about, played at New Mexico State, and he got tons of free clubs, so... Do you know anything about that?
I don't. I'm sure. I think college programs treat their players pretty well. I've not found that out yet, but
I heard you can just be like, Callaway, I want some new clubs. Then Titleist, I want some new clubs. And they just send you what you want.
I'm not 100% sure. I know most of the schools I was looking at, they had a partnership with TaylorMade.
Okay.
And Adidas. So they get their apparel and clubs for a good price.
That's pretty cool. So mm-hmm. TaylorMade, what are they? Those P770s or something? Is that their new irons?
Yeah, they have the whole P series.
You should try out a couple sets and, you know, swing some this way.
I mean, I'm a TaylorMade guy anyway.
I could use some of those. Sure. I'm amazed at how far you've come in just 4 years. That, like, you've really committed yourself to this. You obviously love something about golf. Do you know what that is?
The way I've described it is the endless search for perfection, to where, you know, you find it, and I found it in the 66, and the next week I didn't play so well. So those short spurts where you play your best golf of your life and then you're back to square one, has been keeping me around, and I haven't lost the bug and won't for a long time. Probably ever, but yeah. And then being surrounded with guys who are on the same mindset through M360 has really made it a more competitive atmosphere to where I'm not trying to only beat myself or a course, but trying to beat other people.
And that's something that you've always said through the years, you know, I like competition. I want the competition. Did you have that in baseball?
A little bit, but it was I like golf better because there's no one to blame. Baseball, there's 9 guys on the field at all times to where, oh, he could have done something. He could have backed that play up. You know, it's just you out there. And, you know, I take the blame and then work super hard on it behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And are you excited about Miami because of that competition?
Super pumped. Yeah, they've got a great program with awesome guys who are pretty good themselves. So I'll have to be fighting for a spot day one, which I am going to enjoy. And looking to secure.
And do those guys have, from what you know, similar goals to you long term?
I think so too. When I went on my visit, the coach mentioned that almost 8 out of the 9 guys on the team right now want to turn professional. And that's of course a huge goal of mine, and I will. So
what did you just say?
Well, I'm gonna hopefully college goes well, and then I'll try out the professional ranks. You know, I've got hope. And I think with the major steps I've taken, I can achieve a lot more.
If I didn't know your story, I'd say you're crazy, but after that's 20 minutes, maybe you could pull it off. Actually,
craziness is involved. I think it was crazy 4 years ago to say that or even 2 years ago to say that I'd be playing Division I golf. So
what's Chris like as a teacher? Got any dirt on him?
Not at all.
He's my boss. Chris is. Let's hear some things.
He is super calm, to where, he can be blunt at times, but he's not the guy who's gonna slap you in the face figuratively or literally. At times of frustration, it's not shown on his face at all, which I thoroughly enjoy. Other than that, I know my swing and he knows my swing. So the fact that we're on the same page has really helped. So yeah, and he knows my goals and he's looking forward to me working really hard and hopefully achieving them.
What was the best instruction he's ever given you?
I don't know any.
I actually think I know the answer.
Yeah,
I have an answer. But I'm curious what he has to say.
Okay, cool. You go first, Danny.
There's been a lot of instruction. I can't really say. I guess just short game, but I don't.
I think when I finally convinced Danny that he needed to learn how to hit a fade, I think that's when things turned for him.
Yeah, honestly, yeah, that's true.
You think so?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and that was probably a year and a half in.
Yeah,
it was a long time in.
Yeah,
because you can control that shot better.
Yeah, yeah. There's a saying that you can talk to a slice, or you can talk to a fade, but a hook won't listen. You know, a hook hits the ground and it runs hard, you know, and a fade has a soft landing. And it was interesting because when me and Danny started working, when we did get to his full swing, you know, we would get his delivery to be pretty neutral. He'd be hitting pretty straight shots, and he'd come in a week later or 2 weeks later, and he was hitting a massive hook again. And we did that for 12 months. It was just like, you know, a rubber band going back. And it sounded like he had bought into that at the time, but I don't think he really understood Danny, you need to swing more to the left and hold off the face more, you know? And I remember saying, hey, just hit giant slices. Don't worry about this perfect cut. Just give me everything you got. And, I think he started as an athlete recognized that I can actually control that. And so those feelings, it's nice in moments of pressure to have something that you can really feel, you know, and you know, even though he fights a hook, it's nice to be able to swing hard left and hold your hands off and know the ball is going to do something, you know. It's something to go right to in that moment, mm-hmm, that is sort of tangible. I can feel what that is. And so when he went that direction, that's when I sort of noticed his ball striking getting to a different level.
And for that first year and a half, I was kind of new to the game and I really didn't know because my previous coach, all he taught was big high draws. I didn't really know what even a cut looked like until I actually started watching PGA Tour golf. And you see Dustin Johnson hitting baby cuts. And now Justin Thomas, Brooks Koepka, all those guys, you know, they're still hitting it a long ways. It's just easier to control.
Is that kind of your go-to shot now?
For sure, yeah. I aim left side of the fairway. If it goes straight, great. If not, it's not going to go OB left. So, yeah.
You got some time after this? Teach me a little
sure.
cut.
Yeah. All right. Do that.
Cool. Thanks. Getting a lot out of this. Some new TaylorMade irons coming. had a little golf lesson coming. I heard you have quite a pre-tournament preparation.
Yeah, I've told my close friends, but I don't.
Are you ready to tell the world?
I'm not. No.
You're not?
I will keep that a secret.
Close to the chest.
It's kind of unique. My dad showed it to me and I tried it for the first time. It's not really anything mental, but physically, it gets me in the right shape.
You eat like a bunch of pizza the night before?
Not quite. Okay. I mean, a little pizza would be nice, but
it's okay. Interesting though. I think how a young person can recognize that there's some preparation to competing in golf, you know, that there's getting his mind ready, you know, through meditation the night before, the morning of. They're stocking his bag with snacks and fluids that are going to keep him fueled all the way through. There's prep for his body. You know, there's keeping the sun off of him. I mean, all of those things, you know, matter, and it's hard to quantify, you know, what that, you know, does for a round in terms of score. But you certainly don't want to not do it and hope that things work out. And so I just think that speaks to his maturity as a competitor, that he knows that he needs to look at every facet of the game, you know, from physical to mental and everything in between.
I mean, one of the things that jumps out most to me from talking to you, I don't know you too much before this, is you're an elite golfer, and the things you emphasize as you've been telling your story are really not technical swing things at all. They're mindfulness, they're preparation, they're, I don't know, Chris mentioned eating right and wearing sunscreen. Not that sunscreen is the reason you're going to
bucket hat.
Bucket hat. Yep. You wear a bucket hat?
Occasionally. When it's 90 degrees, I could care less about how I look on the golf course.
Well, I mean, you can pull it off. You're good. If you're shooting a 66.
I think he pulls it off.
Yeah.
He pulls it off.
Yeah. But yeah, this holistic care, you know, care and training for yourself and your body and your game and how it all matters, really.
Right. Yeah. I keep referencing my dad, but I mean, he preaches control the controllables. Once you're out on the golf course, I mean, your swing's your swing. It's not going to change a whole lot. So, you know, the night before, do whatever I can to my mind, my body, to where it's in a state I don't have to think about that on the golf course. I can just think about playing.
Wait, is there any time you and Chris have ever gotten into a fight?
No, it's been a pretty even keel relationship so far.
Yeah. Is that true? Has he ever been a bad student?
I get frustrated occasionally.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. We've never had any major disagreements. And if Danny's ever disagreed with something that I've said, he's sort of kept it in. But I think, you know, the player-coach relationship, you know, when you start to spend a lot of time together, Danny and I spend a lot of time together. We've been on golf vacations together. You know, I mean, you get to know somebody on a pretty personal level. And so, you know, I think we're at the point where if Danny did disagree with something, like, you know, he'd feel comfortable saying, you know, I disagree with that. And there's times where we're working on stuff and it's, and I can sense his frustration, like, 'cause he's just not getting something. And he'll say, you know, I need a different way of thinking about this, or is there a different way for me to understand it or get there? And I think that's when you're spending that time with somebody, that's really helpful, because the communication between the player coach is really important when you're trying to play at a really high competitive level.
Absolutely. Seems like you have a pretty good relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. That's something that, for me personally, is like such a great part of this profession, is getting to know these kids on that level. And them knowing that, you know, I've got their back, you know. I mean, I'm on my phone, you know, I get home from a long day of work and I'm in my bed and I'm texting these kids, you know, hey, what's going on? How you playing? I saw your tournament score. And, you know, after big tournaments, me and Danny talk, you know, every night, just checking in with each other. Just so important.
Yeah, absolutely. Chris reached out on Instagram for some questions. I got one here. Who is your PGA player comparison?
Comparison. Yeah, I'd have to go with my favorite player, Patrick Cantlay. He's a guy, people might not know him. He's a guy who's under the radar. He's ranked top 25 in the world, I think, or at least he was. Was number one amateur in the world, played at UCLA. You know, he's just so calm. He takes a lot of time on the golf course, which I do too. He's really a grinder and has kind of worked up the ranks. And yeah, I try to model my game. He's got an excellent golf swing, and just seems like a cool guy.
I thought for a moment you were going to say Patrick Reed. This is going to turn really interesting.
I'm not the biggest Patrick Reed fan, and I don't think the golf world is at this moment either.
You feel okay saying that, knowing you might, you know, be on tour someday with him? You could be a Ryder Cup teammate of his. Would you do that?
I don't know about that.
Would you be his teammate, or would you tell Jim Furyk, don't play with me?
Well, he's got a. I don't know if he'll be a captain's pick anytime soon.
No, let's say you and him both qualify in how many years? 2024. Let's say 2028 Ryder Cup.
Sure, he'd be pretty old by then, but yeah. It's possible. No, I'd be fine. He's an awesome competitor.
Sure is.
Captain America. You can't disagree with that.
Passion.
Yeah.
Lots of passion.
I'd love to be a teammate with him.
He's probably not going to have another teammate until 2028 when you make it. He's going to we need to send this podcast right. to him.
Yeah.
We got one guy who wants to play with you, Danny Fisher.
Danny, what do you think you're going to need to get to that next level? Do you think the formula has to change moving forward? Or do you think it's just keep chipping away at it?
Yeah, I don't think it necessarily has to change unless something drastic happens. I think I've been chipping away. The 8% growth, I think if that continues, it'll happen. I mean, just refining all my skills. And then, of course, staying loose. I want to still be social in a way. Just the combination of hard work and a healthy lifestyle. Going forward will be good.
Yeah, I think, you know, when I go to tour events as a spectator, as a volunteer, and talk to some of the coaches on the range, and you see those people on TV and you think that there's this, you know, magic formula and stuff like that. They're doing something so much different. And they're not, you know. Hearing and Gilchrist, who's a great instructor, working with a lot of the girls, the Jatanagon girls, you know, and he's just on the range and he's talking alignment, ball position. You know, I mean, there's not this, like, you know, secret room of golf performance out there. So I think, you know, the road you're on is great. I think that you're going to get some great support at your school, and it's going to give you some great competition and be able to compare yourself against, you know, the best collegiate players out there.
Chris, I've heard you say before, you go to these top tournaments and there's tons of awesome swings on the range, but only a few really good scores. What makes you think Danny can be in the really good scores?
I think that just the will to get the job done, will to get the ball in the hole, the grind, you know, getting through those tough rounds and just never giving in. And working on things that, you know, like, you're not good at. Like, Daniel will work on anything. And I think that's important. He's just not in love with the things that he's great with.
Danny, your high school season's finishing up. What's next on your tournament schedule?
So next we have sectionals. We're coming off a regional win, which is exciting. So we're going to have to play close to our best. Top three teams get out of sectionals and then on to state. So we're hoping to get back to the state championship, where we lost by two last year to six-time in a row champions Hinsdale Central. Just giving them a run for their money, but sectionals is next.
And if you win state after being on this podcast, selfishly, it's really going to help our it's going to be a podcast bump. We're going to get, you know, next time Tigers, he's going to come on the pod, win the Masters.
I hope so.
Yeah.
That'll be awesome.
Well, Danny, thank you very much for being with us. Best of luck in the rest of the season. Chris, thanks as always.
My pleasure.
Thank you for having me on.
Listeners, we'll talk to you.
Clean
next
contact.
I hit it again because that shot was a defining moment. And when a defining moment comes along, you define the moment. For the moment defines you.
comes.